Good evening and welcome to Slam the Gavel, the show that tells all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slam the Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With urgent assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit and the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register. I have another announcement. Go to the site, pleasedoyourjob.com, and sign the petition. We need 2,000 more signatures to get a case reopened. That's pleasedoyourjob.com. I have a return guest on. I'm so happy to have Connie Regoli back on. She was last on my podcast, season 2, episode 98, season 3. Episodes 63, 70, 77, and 89. And she's on here today to talk about the Tennessee Family Rights and Responsibility Act that could have the potential to sweep through this whole nation and the disaster of that all. Welcome, Connie Regoli.
Hey, good afternoon. And how are you today?
I'm doing okay so far until you told me about this bill.
Well, and I want to thank you. I watch what you're doing. We've known each other now. We've traveled through this swamp. And, you know, I know the tragedy you've gone through. People who know me know how hard I have worked, how relentless I have been for, oh my gosh, I don't even want to tell you how many years now, but basically for 3 decades, for those who are just hitting on me the first time, for 3 decades, I served as an attorney all throughout Middle Tennessee. I traveled to half of the 95 counties. I mean, I went in the courtrooms of the wealthiest counties, the poorest counties, the most rural counties where, you know, everybody's just barely got their flip-flops and t-shirts on and really stood the ground for people, just everyday people just trying to fight for their rights. I mean, I have told legislator, I have spent more time trying to defend people against their own government.
Right.
So, yeah. So I'm really an expert at that. But, you know, I got for everything that I did and all of my aggressive stances and all of my public persona, I was retaliated against pretty right. severely, just like a lot of victims in family court and CPS court are if they speak out. And so ultimately, the whole system turned against me and created a fake crime so that they could prosecute me for a fake crime. Even everybody was in on it. The judge, the DA, the DCS attorney, they all worked together to create this fake crime. And it was like once, you know, it's kind of hard to tell in the background how much they work together, but it's kind of like they all sort of joined the pack, you know, once they figure out what's going on. So that happened. Ultimately, it's been going on for a long time now. It started in 2018 when I stood my ground for a client, really stood my client's ground. Mm-hmm. The criminal trial was in 2022, and here we are in 2024. So what are we looking at here? I mean, that's like 6 years, right, of purgatory. And now the Court of Appeals is withholding that opinion to reverse that conviction, which means I'm like stuck in, you know, purgatory. I totally know there's so many family court victims out there and, you know, sometimes they scorn attorneys, you know, for being the bad guys. But I'm telling you, when attorneys stand up, they get brutalized, right? I mean, that's just where we are. So this year, I have done it before. I have been a state court or a state legislative watcher. I've spoken before different committees all the way back to 2008. I would have a few years. I'd be too busy. I couldn't become involved. I tried to become involved in the local bar association so that they would watch the law. They don't really seem to care.
No.
The bar associations are really not paying that much attention. And particularly with CPS and DCS cases, because right. I think the government overreach there, and it's all driven by money, but the government overreach is so horrid. It's so horrid. And so I knew that last year and along the way, I'm going to kind of explain to the people a little bit about the way the state legislative system works, because I think there are probably listeners out there that have not been involved in that. And I would love to educate and activate them to come and speak and be heard in this process, because that's the only way we're going to survive. You know, it's your state is everything. I mean, your state controls so much of what you're doing, and they get all this money from the federal government to control you. So let's talk about this year. In well, let's talk about the Tennessee General Assembly a little bit. So we have two houses. We have a Senate and we have a House. And then, and almost every state has two houses. There's one state, I think it's Nebraska, that's called a unicameral legislature. They only have one house, but basically you have two. So a bill, a new law has to pass in the House and has to pass in the Senate. And then once both the House and the Senate have signed it, the governor has to sign it, and then it becomes law. Now, in each house, it operates a little bit differently. So in the House of Representatives, they have a subcommittee and a committee, and then the floor, it's called, because they have to vote on the bill three times. In the Senate, they have a they do it a little bit different. They like pass it on the floor, then put it in committee, and then put it back on the floor. So it's just, I mean, it's very tricky. It's a little confusing when you first hear it. But so I was watching for CPS bills that were coming up this year, and I spotted a couple bills, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on them because I really want to drill down to this family, what they call family rights and responsibilities. But I'm going to give you an example of a few things that came up. And I went in and I spoke against these bills, and they passed anyway. It's like it's just like crazy. So one of the bills reversed the standard of proof for parents. So basically it said that if a court found that a child had been what they term as severely abused, and you know, the use of these words are a little loose sometimes, but if they found that a child was severely abused, that the child could not return to a parent unless the court excluded the parent by clear and convincing evidence as the perpetrator or any other person, grandma, anybody. So, you know, I use the analogy. It's kind of like, you know, the bank gets robbed and you happen to be in that neighborhood that day. And so the court finds a bank was robbed and you happen to be close by. So if we can't exclude you as the bank robber, you're going to have to go to jail, right? That's really what this is about. I mean, and I told them this is such a constitutional violation. This is so horrid. You are reversing the burden of proof. I mean, we have constitutionally parental rights, and the Supreme Court has said you have to make a finding that a parent is unfit before you can interfere with the parent-child relationships. So they have that bill. Along with that, in that same bill, they had a few other things. One of them, which has actually been sort of in the books for a while, and I've been bothered by it for a long time, but it says that if the state can put on proof by an expert that the child, that they can reasonably expect or predict sometime in the future that the child is going to suffer from a severe psychological event such as anxiety or depression, then that is severe abuse, and the parent can't see the child. Now, you know, some of the people are like, well, you know, a child, you know, children, you may not see it at first, but, you know, they may end up with anxiety or depression as a result of a parent's behavior. But, you know, you can't do that. You can't predict that they're going to have some injury or harm in the future. And again, you know, an analogy is if I'm in a car wreck and, you know, I'm trying to get damages, but I walked away from the car wreck just fine, I can't bring in an expert to say, yeah, you know, but sometime in the future, her sprained neck, you know, may create a, you know, cervical damage, right? I mean, that would probably even be better because that's actually physical. But you can't predict, you can't do this future prediction of a psychological event. And the bill passed. Okay. I'm just,
Oh my gosh.
it passed. And so in that argument, there were a couple questions that were asked to me. And one of them, from a Democrat, a very nice gentleman who's been in state legislature for a long time, he asked a totally different question. He said, you know, I've been looking at this bill and I've been very concerned about terminating parental rights over token support, about, you know, a lot of these parents are poor anyway, and I would just kind of like to know your feedback on that. And I looked right at him, and I know I was getting daggers from the eyes of others, but I said, in my opinion, termination of parental rights should never occur over money. It just
Right.
shouldn't. I mean, you take somebody's child because they don't pay child support to the state, and then you pay somebody else to raise the child. So I've been out talking and talking, and you know, they just don't want to hear from me because DCS actually comes in and argues against me. It's so funny. It's so hilarious.
Oh man.
They just say whatever, and I don't get a chance to respond.
Well, it's because they're good at lying. That's all they do.
Well, and they just twist the way they twist the, and they lie about how they handle things and what they do, but they twist it up. Like they're like, oh, well, you know, the child would have already been adjudicated severely abused. So all the parent has to do is just, you know, show that they didn't do it or something. I'm like, no. So then there was another bill, and this one actually got sliced down a little bit, but there was another bill that said that it would be considered neglect, want and suffering if a parent had a child with a mental health or substance abuse issue that they could not provide resources for their child through no fault of their own. So basically it was saying that you can't parent the child because the state and the community, and we don't have out there resources for helping parents with children, as more and more complex as child rearing is. And so the state wants to take the child, of course, so they can get the money and get the federal dollars and then control the parent and then get in the parent's life and inspect their home and make them do drug screens and make them do psychological evaluations, et cetera. So they did strike part of that bill. So I'm happy about that. And I do say, you know, if I just get out there a little bit, if I just make a little, of course, they would never give me credit for anything, but if I just give a tweak, you know, and make them stop and think about something, I feel like it's a win.
Yeah, definitely. Any input to save families and future generations that they're going to destroy haphazardly.
Right. Okay, so now let's talk about the meat of the subject here, because I know time's going to click away from us, and this is so critically important. And I'm going to be talking about it probably all weekend. I've already been on a radio show about it. There is a bill out called the Family Rights and Responsibilities Act. They passed this through the Senate committee in Tennessee. And this bill right here, I've got it right here. If anybody wants to look it up themselves, they can Google Tennessee 2024 SB 2749. Okay, so you can Google that and it should give you a link right to the bill. So this is a bill with several pages. I've got mine all marked up and color-coded. Mm-hmm. But let me highlight some of this, the critical features of this. So first of all, let's talk about what is a parent. Now, you know, Matt Walsh made a lot of money going around asking people what is a woman, right? So he needs to now go around and say what is a parent, because this is the way the state is going to define a parent. A parent is a biological, legal, or adopted parent. Okay. And then the sentence goes on and it says, or an individual who has been granted decision-making authority over the child under state law. So we are now as we go through this, the next section is going to say, here are parental rights, and we're going to enumerate them. Okay, so we're going to say to direct the upbringing of the child, to direct moral and religious training, to make medical and mental health care decisions, to access medical records, to direct the education, review educational records, have children excused from school for religious purposes, participate in parent-teacher associations. And then there's some things about being notified, blocking DNA testing, et cetera. So they've enumerated what these rights are. So they have also defined decision-making. So decision-making authority means the power granted by the state. We should know, like every time it uses the word state, statute, court, right? We should know every time those things come up, we're damaging our rights, right? We're not adding to them. So decision-making power is granted by the state to a non-parent to make important decisions regarding the child, including education, religious, healthcare, extracurricular, and travel. Now, think about that. Just, we can stop right there. The next one is government entity, which says any branch, department, agency, commission, or instrumentality of the state government. Oh, you have to excuse
wow.
me.
You're okay. This is crazy.
Yeah. Now remember, any branch, department, agency, commission, or instrumentality of state government. So the literal reading of this is a teacher or principal could grant decision-making authority to somebody else because they're part of the state.
No way.
Yeah.
So
a teacher.
So you're saying a teacher can, I don't know, get involved in a custody dispute and just hand over.
But the teacher can grant decision-making authority.
Oh.
Because these three things are defined. Parent, government entity, and decision-making authority are defined. So they are defined. The parent includes this individual who's been granted decision-making authority, right? Decision-making authority is the power granted by the state or granted by the state to a non-parent. And government entity is any branch, department, agency, commission, or instrumentality of the state government. So, and we've enumerated what these rights are. So we're slicing and dicing what parental rights are. And this bill gives the right for the state, anybody, the state is anything, any instrumentality of state government. So is that the Department of Health? Is that the Department of Education? Is that the Department of Children's Services? Right? Mm-hmm. All of those things are instrumentalities of the government, and that they can be, that they can grant decision-making authority to an individual who is a non-parent. Okay. Now, again, people hear this in the abstract and they think, okay, well, yeah, that sounds a little fishy, but I don't know. Right. So what are some things we have going on? Right. We have medical care for children. That is questionable, that some people don't like.
Mm-hmm.
We have mental health treatment for children that some people don't like. We have gender medical treatment and mental health treatment for children that some people don't like. All of these things, and anybody who's paying attention to what's happening in families knows that across this country, children are being removed on gender issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a Montana family, Indiana family, Texas family, California family.
Mm-hmm.
So this is huge. This is huge, right? All right. So let's go on and talk about some other things in this bill. So as I told you, it enumerates rights. And then in this bill, five times, it uses the word unless. So you have this right unless, right?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one of them that I have fought so much is forensic interviews of children, video and audio recording of children. And it says they have the parental right to consent before any government entity makes a video or voice recording of the child unless it's made or part of a law enforcement interaction, whatever that is, which could be an SRO officer who is working in the school, that they now have a right to record your child without your consent, or a forensic interview. And then there's a couple others. So this bill, which I have said for a long time, and we've been trying to tweak through the courts. And in California, many years ago, before it was so liberal, when it was more conservative, there was actually a Ninth Circuit case out there that said that you cannot go into a school and start interrogating a child without parental consent. And that case went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But now the statute is taking that right away. I mean, we will never have the ability to challenge that as a constitutional right if state lawmakers write it down. Mm-hmm. And here's another problem with statutes anyway. I have been, as an attorney, and I'm going to give people kind of an overview on this as well. So when you look at laws, you have statutes, which those are all the laws written by your legislature. Mm-hmm. And then you have case law, and case law is where the courts interpret the laws written by the legislature, okay? Or they'll rule them unconstitutional. But then you also have the executive branch of government that creates all these regulations and policies and rules. And whenever you're involved then with one of these government agencies, you are subject to those regulations and policies as well. So you've got all three branches of government making quote unquote laws, right? Things that you have to abide by once you become involved with that agency. And it can be DCS, Department of Education, mm-hmm. Department of Health, et cetera. So when they start enumerating, when they start putting in this bill exceptions, okay, and I have watched general assemblies and I've watched statutes for 30 years. Once they have it in a code, they can go back every year and add something, take something away, sneak something in, and now it'll just be a one-liner. Right? Like, who knows what it's going to be? They come into this bill and, oh, we're going to add to section 36A103B17-I, just one sentence. And it says that if you refuse to comply with your child's gender preference, right, that's that you don't have any rights anymore. Right. So codifying itself is a problem. Just putting it down. We have parental rights under the United States Supreme Court. We already have parental rights. Mm-hmm. Codifying it is a problem because it's enumerating it. Second of all, it's putting the government in control of all those rights. Mm-hmm. It's putting the government in control of all of our rights. It is so, so frightening. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole section. It's supposed to also like provide a the parent the ability to sue if somebody violates these rights, but mm-hmm. there's so many exceptions to mm-hmm. understanding what consent is. Like it says that a parent can give a blanket consent. Well, where is that going to come into play? That's going to come into play when you go to school and you sign your child up at school, enroll your child. There's going to be fine print in there that says that enrolling your child in this school gives consent for the administrators of the school too, and it'll be little tiny, tiny print, and it'll say to, you know, do a mental health assessment of your child, to, you know, interview your child about any suspected abuse, to give therapy on gender issues. I mean, that blanket consent can be anywhere, right? We can mm-hmm. just stick that in anywhere. And then there's this other section that I call it the reasonable reliance section. And says a government entity or any other person reasonably relies in good faith on an individual's representations that the individual is the parent of a minor child or has otherwise been granted authority to make decisions regarding the child's minor care under state law. So you just, there's so many exceptions to it that you'll never be able to sue anybody. So yeah. I know I've traveled through this kind of fast and it's so mind blowing to me. After I got this bill and I read through it and I marked it up, I honestly was exhausted.
I bet.
Terrified. So just based upon what I've seen, I mean, do you see how as a, you know, somebody who's not even been a lawyer, but had to deal with the system so much, what kind of damage this could do?
Very, very damaging. And the thing is, these bills, and there was a Pennsylvania House bill. I can't think of the numbers, but it was for shared parenting. And I thought, oh, this is great. Shared parenting. I think this is what a lot of people do. Oh, this sounds good. But right. My friend said, but did you read the bill? It's like, okay, let me go back and read it. I had to read it three times. I took a highlighter and I wrote what was wrong with this bill, and it didn't pass, thank God, because there's just so much that can go wrong with it and would actually cause more litigation and harm. But then, upon doing that, I received a lot of flack from some individuals on Facebook, as you well know. But we have to read these bills really thoroughly. And that's the problem is you think, oh, this is going to be okay. This sounds okay. You don't understand it. You got to dissect it.
Well, and you have to, everything that you read, you have to read from the perspective. This is what I do. You have to read from the perspective of what could possibly go wrong here, right?
Right.
I mean, and the same thing, and I have seen with some shared parenting and stuff that the what they put in there, it is going to increase the litigation, keep in mind, a lot of these lawmakers are lawyers, right? A lot of them are, that job security is out there. But this bill right here is sure to make domestic, even non-CPS, domestic litigation more complex, because now they're really going to be battling for decision-making rights. Now, I'll say, with perm plans came up, and we had to go through this perm plan thing, go to mediation. Everybody's trying to move the right direction. There's a whole section in there for decision-making, right? And that was really just like the smallest section. I always added a few things in there, like if the parents can't agree on extracurricular activities, the parent with the child can, take the child to whatever they want as long as they pay. I mean, I always try to just kind of cover some gaps. But most of the times, we had to be careful to say joint, because if we said joint and one parent didn't agree, I mean, I don't like parents to go to jail over contempt of court over stupid things, right? But there are some attorneys who love to do that.
Oh,
And
yeah.
there were in Tennessee, there was a case that was joint decision making on religion, and one parent had a child baptized. They freaking put the other parent in jail or something because they didn't agree to it.
I remember that.
But now that whole little section on decision making is going to be a whole nother battleground, right? Because one parent's going to say, I should have sole decision making on education. I should have sole decision making on mental health treatment. And we've had a little bit of that battle, but that hasn't been the big battle. The big battle has been, honestly, child support, right? Like days in child support, right? Because everybody, which is the whole Title 4D thing is just crazy and kind of wacko anyway. But now in any divorce or custody cases, decision making is going to be a big battleground. And who knows what the schools are going to do with this? The schools are
Crazy.
and the courts and paternity actions. I mean, it's now this is going to this is I can't even this is a whole this is a whole nother realm. This is a whole nother place, right? That we're going to have this issue of other people and our children. Other people and our children. It's been bad enough that we've had custody battles and DCS battles, but how do other people play into this?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. They want to make money too.
Well, I mean, yeah, we didn't. I mean, the money. Oh gosh, of course, I spent a lot of time talking about the money and foster care and adoption and Title 4D. Even is so there's so many money incentives there that are perverse, but. But this is control. This is control over the children. This is really bondage. I
Oh, yeah.
consider this, I consider this to be bondage over families, parents, and even children, because children are now going to have the possibility of being subjected to decisions made for them by other people who are not their parent without any legal standards having been met, right? So you may end up being the, maybe it may end up that your only job with your child is to, feed them breakfast, pat them on the butt as they go to school, and then when they get home, feed them a little dinner and put them to bed. That may be it, right? You may be, their mental health, their medical care, their what they're being taught. I mean, all of that is delineated in here and is under control of a government decision maker.
What if, okay, so we already have kids here. What if parents told their kids, if anyone takes you out of class and hauls you into a boardroom and wants to talk to you without anyone else around, just say, I can't talk to you until I have my lawyer present.
Our parent, basically. I say parent, right? Because and this is something that I have talked to my grandkids about. It's like you, if you, if somebody asks you questions you're not uncom, you're not comfortable with, or questions about your family, I said you should say, you need to call my grandma, or you need to call my mom. And I, we're going to be at the place that we have to do that. We have to do it. If they, because here's what they're doing. They're already one step ahead of us because they have mental health professionals in all these schools.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I know one of my grandchildren told me is all I have to do is hold my hand up and say, I need to speak to Dr. Kathy, and I can go down the hall and talk to her as long as I want to.
Oh,
And I'm like, what? What?
what the heck?
What? Like, we never gave consent for that.
Oh.
And so, that is, I think that's totally inappropriate. I think if, I especially without a parent knowing what's going on.
Well, I mean, I didn't know what was going on when my boys were being hauled out of their classrooms by CPS. I had no idea that was going on. I didn't even know it happened a second time.
Right. That's right. That's right. People don't, you don't know it. It just happens.
Yep.
And it's, anyway, it's that's where we are. Here's my call out to everybody. So here's what I want people to do, because we now have to be activated. So I want people to send an email, even if you're not in Tennessee, send an email to the representative on the House side that's going to be carrying this bill. His name is Jeremy Faison. He's supposed to be fairly conservative, but his email is REP. Dot Jeremy dot Faison rep dot Jeremy dot Faison at capital CAPITOL dot TN dot gov. And we can, because here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you, this passes in Tennessee and it will be mirrored in every other state across the country,
Oh, yeah,
because
it's
that is
true.
what they do. It will be mirrored. And if you hear this and you're in Oklahoma or Wisconsin or Minnesota or California or Oregon, and you don't want total government control over your parenting of children, then you need to send them a message, right? Even if, and just say, we heard about this. This is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this. You need to stop. You need to think about what you're doing. And then I'm going to be talking about it more. So people want to just kind of jump on board with what we're talking about. I am on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, always my name. I have an unusual enough name that you can typically find me. And I'm at Connie Regulie on TikTok. I'm Connie Regulie on Instagram. I'm Connie Regulie on Facebook and even YouTube. And I do put out a blog and put it through my Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, so you can keep up on it. I want people, my goal now is to educate and activate. And I really, really need people to want to step forward and be heard. And when you're heard in the General Assembly, here's one good thing that happened last year in Tennessee, as a bill passed that said if a government entity has a public hearing, they have to have a time for public comment. They have to. So the General Assembly likes to control who comes in and talks. And the very first week I went in, and I gave my information to testify, and they're like, well, let me see if we can get you permission to talk. And I'm like, no permission needed.
Right.
And so, they tried to get me the runaround about there were rules and regulations,
Oh.
and I was like, but I took the law to them, and ever since I took the law to them, they've allowed it. Now I'm sure next year they'll probably create some crazy rule or something that prevents it. But I'm very prepared. It's 2 to 3 minutes. I write it down. I rehearse it. I practice it. and give, you know, and deliver my speech. Last week, this past week, I took my granddaughter with me, and I told them, I'm like, look, I have nothing to gain here, and I get nothing out of this. But this right here, my granddaughter, is why I'm here. Because if we don't put the brakes, I mean, the young people do not understand how bad this is. I also talked to them, and I know we want to wrap it up so we don't keep it
No,
too
it's
long.
okay.
You know, I actually went in and I told them, you know, the Department of Children's Services and Juvenile Courts were created in 1995. And I said, they were created to be remedial. I mean, so were family courts. They were created to be remedial and help solve the situation and not do more damage or be punitive, right?
Oh, the Kids for Cash scandal up here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like now, and there's so much money involved in it, and people are, I'm tracking down, and we can make this a whole nother program, but I'm tracking down the bonus checks that are going out to DCS officials. Huge, like seven, eight, nine, $10,000 a month in bonus checks I've caught them with. And yeah, and then connections between members on the legislature and nonprofits that are making money on it, which I'm not going to mention right now because I'm still unpeeling that one. But
Oh boy,
but they're so deeply invested in the money, making our children a commodity, that they've totally lost sight.
You know, I was even thinking if people want to take this podcast and email it to their rep in their
Yes.
state, they're welcome to do that as well. I mean, that would
Oh
help.
yes, for sure. You know, and if you're in Tennessee, I'm going to do a special call out for anybody in the state of Tennessee. Please connect with me. Please, please, please. I will help write your speech. I will get you there. I will, you know, walk you around. You can just hang out with me. And you know, I believe in, you know, Jesus sent the disciples out in twos just because, right? Like just because. So, you know, if you just want to go and watch and just, you know, point at her and say, you know, listen to her. She knows what she's talking about. But we need that strength and that power and that voice and your presence there. And so please, if you're in Tennessee, reach out.
I'm so glad we had this conversation. I'd like to have you back on as we progress through this, or I hope it just stops, but you know, there's so much money involved.
Yeah, it's not going to stop, but it'll get through the House committee. We've got to, I don't know what next move I'm going to make, but, you know, we've got to try. We have to try.
Well, hey, don't jump off, okay? And God bless you for doing all this. Slam the Gavel is a podcast to help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I'm your host, Marianne Petry, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, and Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on Spotify, YouTube, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio. And feel free to buy me a coffee to help support this podcast. And you can find that in the podcast notes. Thank you very, very, very much, Connie Regoli.
Thank you.